All right. Michael Sims. Michael Sims is the founder and editor of Autumn House Press, a nonprofit publisher of poetry books and other literature, and he is the author of 5 collections of poetry, including Black Stone, The Happiness of Animals, Migration, Notes on Continuing Light, and The Fire Eater, as well as co-author of The Long Man's Dictionary and Handbook of Poetry. And he's taught all over at the University of Iowa, Duquesne, Carnegie Mellon, and he currently teaches in the Masters of Fine Arts program at Chatham University. He and his lovely wife, Eva, who is sitting right there, and their 2 children live in the historic Mount Washington neighborhood of Pittsburgh, and I want to say that we're really grateful for all that Autumn House does in this town, because they makes possible a lot of programs, a lot of opportunities. Please welcome Michael Sims.
Thank you, Joan. How's that? You hear me? Okay, good. Thank you, Joan. You do so much for everybody. Thank you so much, Jimmy. Thank you. It's a great program. I'm pleased and proud to be here. I see old friends, and I see new friends, and it's great. Michael, you and I read together the last time 10 years ago at the opening of what was then the new Autumn House office. Jan Beatty, you and I, the 3 of us read together. It's been far too long. I'm pleased to be reading with you. And Renee, you did a great job. Thanks. I love your poetry. I usually do poetry readings, but I think tonight I'm going to read you a story, just as a change for me. And some of you know that I'm part Native American. My roots are in the Southwest, particularly in West Texas. There's an area called the Trans-Pecos area, Pecos River, and west of there is called Trans-Pecos. And that area has a long history of storytelling, of legends, of folk tales. And I'd like to read you a piece that I wrote, so it's original, but it's based on that style of storytelling. So it's a Native American tale, but it's told by a contemporary Native American. It's called The Shoes of Montezuma. Did you know that Montezuma, the last Aztec emperor worshipped as a god, was born in an ancient city on the Pecos River? The legend has it that he wore golden shoes and that he walked in them to Mexico City. When the Spanish confiscated the shoes, Montezuma could not walk back. After the emperor was killed, his ghost returned to the Pecos. He instructed his people to dismantle their houses and streets and temples, which were constructed of pure gold, take the treasure to a mountain, and hide it in a large cavern. He knew it would be better for his people to be poor than for the Spanish to find the riches among them. Montezuma's ghost remained to guard the gold, and the Indians covered the entrance with dirt, marking the spot with a white boulder. Many men, both Mexican and Anglo, have tried to find the lost gold of Montezuma. There are many stories connected to the treasure. One story takes place here in Alvarez, the town where this series of stories is based. It concerns 2 young pastors, shepherds, who always herded their sheep together. They had been warned not to do so by their families because the sheep overgrazed the sparse grass of the mountain. But the boys did not heed the warnings and continued to spend all their time together. One day they came upon a white boulder, and beside it, 8 feet up the cliff, was a cave uncovered by a recent rain. One boy, standing on the shoulders of the other, peered into the cave. Instead of darkness, as he expected, the inside of the cave was all bright. "Lift me higher, Francisco. I want to climb in. Now, watch out, I'm going to throw something down for you." At Francisco's feet fell a small golden bowl bright as the sun. He picked it up, turning it over in his hands, amazed. In the cave, Juan was even more amazed. An entire city, with streets and temples and houses all of gold, lay before him. Surely, he thought, this is one of the fabled seven cities. He wandered through the abandoned streets and alleys to the central square, walked up the temple steps, passed between the giant columns, entered the great doorway, and there, sitting on a throne beside the altar, was a dark man dressed in the finest cloth. He wore golden shoes and a tall feathered headdress. He was glowering at the boy in a menacing way. Francisco waited at the cave entrance for a long time. He grew worried, and he shouted often at the hole where his friend had disappeared, but there was no reply. He tried scrambling up to the cave, but the cliff was too steep and the cave entrance too high. Finally, as night came on, Francisco could hear wolves and cougars in the darkness, and he knew he had to go and bring back help. He herded his and Juan's sheep back to the village and told his friends and family what had happened. The villagers passed around the golden bowl, leaving their fingerprints on the brilliant surface. Their reflection stared back at them, distorted by the curve of the perfectly shaped utensil. No one had ever seen such a beautiful thing in this poor village. Obviously, the priest said, such a treasure belongs to the church. Francisco's father snatched the bowl from the priest's hands. Obviously, the treasure belongs to the families of the boys who discovered it. Juan's father agreed with Francisco's father, but most of the village agreed with the priest. This went on all night, people arguing over who owned the lovely bowl. The next morning, Francisco led the entire village to the place where he thought the white boulder lay. It was right here, he said, next to this mesquite tree. There are many mesquite trees in these mountains, his father said. The boy is lying, the priest hissed. He wants to keep the treasure for himself, perhaps even killed his friend so he wouldn't have to share. Juan's father grabbed Francisco by the arm. What have you done with my son? He screeched, shaking the boy. He was here, I swear by the Holy Virgin, cried the frightened Francisco. Blasphemer, the priest exclaimed. Now he takes the name of our blessed Madonna in vain. Everyone gasped and hurriedly gave the sign of the cross. Francisco's father stood by looking at the ground. He didn't step forward to defend his son. Like the others, he believed his son was guilty of lying and perhaps of murder. He knew he had lost any chance of owning the golden bowl. Months went by, and Juan did not return. The priest wrote to the cardinal, explaining his suspicions and describing the bowl which he now used for sacraments. Such treasures as you have described, the cardinal replied, do not lie around in the desert waiting to be picked up. Ergo, the boy is guilty of theft. The bowl, he continued, may be one that was stolen some time ago from the cathedral in Mexico City. It should immediately be sent to me for examination. The boy, he added as an afterthought, should be arrested. Francisco was brought in chains to the authorities in Guadalajara to stand trial, but the cardinal, claiming jurisdiction, took over the case and gave the boy to the inquisitors. For years they kept him in prison, torturing him with water and beating him with ropes. Always they asked the same question, where did you get the bowl? At first he told only the truth, but after a few months, hoping to stall them, he made up a story. He drew a map in the dust of the dungeon floor, a golden city on a cliff at the bend of a river. He was actually repeating what someone long ago had told him about Toledo, but his tormentors thought that at last they had extracted the truth. An expedition of soldiers, priests, and Indian guides was outfitted. When it returned in disgrace, having lost over half their contingent to the Apaches, the priests increased their torture of Francisco until he confessed that he had been lying. He reverted to his original story, which enraged them further. After more torture, he made up a new story to satisfy them. Again, an expensive expedition was mounted. Again, it failed to bring back anything but tales of savages. In this way, many rumors of the location of the City of Gold were spread through the Spanish territories and the church hierarchy. After a while, no one, not even Francisco, remembered his original version of where he had found the golden bowl. How many years of torture he suffered, how many versions of the story passed his lips, and how many expeditions were launched based on his desperate untruths. An entire generation of inquisitors were trained on his ruined body. He no longer felt pain, but impassively observed the apprentices' attempts to learn their craft. Sometimes he offered suggestions and advice. He developed a reputation in the dungeon as the best teacher of the novitiates. It became a privilege, a mark of honor, to be allowed to torment him. No one remembered his original crime. One day, without explanation, he was released. Crippled, diseased, dying, looking much older than his 37 years, he returned to his village of Alvarez. His family did not recognize him. He looked much older than his parents. His father, who had not lifted a hand to try to save him from being arrested, pulled him aside and explained that he, Francisco, could not stay in this village. Our family suffered terrible shame when you were taken away. It has taken years for our neighbors to cease talking about your crime. Even today, we are sometimes referred to as that murderer's family. Do not revisit this shame on us. Please, go with God, but go. Francisco walked into the desert, not knowing where he would be welcome. He wandered far into the night. When he was very tired, he came to a hill where a boy sat watching over his sheep. He sat next to the boy. "Where have you been?"
"I have been here."
"Why didn't you come out of the cave when I called?"
"I couldn't. The emperor wanted the cave to be kept secret."
"Do you know what they did to me?"
"Yes, I know, but it is over now. Come with me."
The old man and the boy herded the sheep through the gullies to the white boulder. The boy helped his friend climb up into the bright cave. The Emperor Montezuma waited inside.
"You have suffered much," the emperor said, his voice echoing through the cave. "Your only crime was to be the one who told the tale. Allow me to help you. What do you wish?"
"I wish to be given back my life," Francisco meekly said.
"That I cannot grant. What else do you wish?"
"If I cannot have back my life, then I wish only to die."
Montezuma took pity on poor Francisco and changed him into an artesian spring. And even today, water flows from the cave's mouth next to the white boulder, bringing life and goodness to the desert. Thank you.